Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I upload an episode to that once a week, once every other week. I've been pretty consistent lately because kickboxing has been fire lately. Definitely want to also give a shout out to those who go to iTunes. It's the most efficient way to get the show. Just enter Warman Kickfighting Show and my podcast pops right up. I'm going to jump right into it. Got four big time cards to talk about that went down in the kickboxing world. And of course, I'm going to close on the Glory event that's going down this weekend. You know, we really did get a little bit of everything, and it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun lately for me as a kickboxing fan, and I want to always do my podcast because I want to do everything in my power to get the athletes and the sport that I love out there as much as possible, because I'm hoping that people fall in love with it the way that I fell in love with it. So, gonna go ahead and start things off and K1, of course, who had their big event this past weekend, or another one of their many big events, but they have moved their schedule up. They've been doing way more cards in the year. April 22nd, they were in Tokyo at the Yayoi Stadium, and I really, really enjoyed this card. Go ahead and jump to the action. There were some, undercard fights that I won't talk about necessarily. I'll go ahead and just bring up the winners. Yumo Seikyo got a victory over Hiroki Kakubo. That was in round one. Seiya Ueda got a victory over Masa by unanimous decision. And then Kazunari Kimura was stopped by a cut, with the victor being Hiromi Ujima on that one. So we'll go ahead and jump right into the main card. Namito Izawa gets a victory over Yuya Suzuki, split decision. It was a close back and forth, but the thing that I like about this fight is it kind of told me where I thought the rest of the night was going to go. Split decisions and the Japanese presence being at the top of the card. Really, if you have a TV show going on in Japan and you have a tournament that reflects the best fighters in the world, and you got four guys in the undercard, or four guys of the Japanese fighters, and they all advance to your semis, meaning no matter what, you get your local television audience gets to see all Japanese fighters in the semis, and they're guaranteed a Japanese champion in the 55 kgs at the end of the night. It's a win-win for them. Now, again, there were some split decisions that could have gone either way, and I'm not going to harp on them too much. Remember, if you were listening to the show, I had Jamie Whalen winning this, and, he definitely did. I think when he got tired, started playing with some spinning back fists and doing some tricks other than staying to the consistent offense that I've seen him do in the past. But him and Nobuchika Torada, that was the fight that I thought the winner of the tournament was going to come out of. Unfortunately, not only was I wrong in my picture of Whalen, but this was one of those situations that we had with Gunapa and Urube. Those two guys took so much out of each other in their first fight that it would be difficult for the winner of the tournament to go on after that. And we had something similar here, where you go to extra round split decision, the fight's that close, the back and forth's that close, and Jamie Whalen comes up short, and Nobuchika Torada moves on, but then he doesn't have anything in the next round. Didn't throw that much offense before Kenji Kubo got him out of there in the second round of that series, but I'll go ahead and continue to go through the first round brackets. The surprise for me was Kisuke Ishida getting the victory over Charles Bong Giovanni. I thought for sure, I was wrong again, but I thought for sure of all the guys that was going to at least move on into the next. I actually thought he had a good chance to go to the finals. Bong Giovanni had those tools, but when he got touched to the body, he stayed touched to the body. Like, he stayed hurt. And Ishida saw it. Build on the advantage. The first shot that hit Bong Giovanni to the body didn't even look like it was that killer of a blow. It's hard to believe that once upon a time this guy had Takuru in trouble, put him on his back. But this shot landed, and I thought that things looked weird. Afterwards, Ishida built on the advantage, closed the distance, let his hands go, got Bong Giovanni. A straight right hand did it in the second round that put him down, and then a flurry of shots when the ref came in and stopped it. Bong Giovanni was still on his feet, wasn't throwing back, but he was still on his feet. And a lot of the shots were, you know, to the head and body, so you can make the argument for them allowing it to go a little bit further. But in the end, the ref stopped it, and there wasn't much complaining from Charles. Ishida moved on. Had a late stoppage victory for Yusuke Takai, and this is something that I want you guys to notice going down the road. Even though going to the third round, he gets a stoppage over Antonio Orton, and that is sometimes it's the guys in tournament who fight the least that have the most when it comes to the last round. And that's what we had in this situation. Yusuke Takai starts what is going to be the thing that kind of leads towards him having a much more in the tank when he gets to the last fight. Kenji Kubo gets a victory over Sane Takchuin. Not much here. Kenji Kubo, I thought, was just a better fighter. And then we also had Kochi defeat KG by knockout in a super fight that was between it, so that knocks out. So your four are Kubo, Torada, Takai, and Ishida, all Japanese fighters. And you couldn't have predicted that. I would have thought at least one, you know, Westerner would have got to the next round. And I actually think that they would prefer at least one Westerner get to that next round. Or at least one, I shouldn't just say Westerner, one non-Japanese fighter. Just because you would like the drama of having, you know, the crowd be all in favor of one Japanese fighter over a foreign guy. With that said, you always have, like I said before, you always have to consider what do TV ratings do. And I do think TV ratings are helped when you have, foreign opposition. But there also is a chance that there was people who were, you know, committed to one of these Japanese athletes who turned the channel when their fighter didn't go on. So after round one of the 55kg tournament, you've got four Japanese fighters left. We'll go ahead and just keep going through the tournament. Next up was Kenji Kubo getting a victory over Nobuchika Torada. Again, I thought that Torada didn't have anything by the time he got to Kubo. I thought that he was game and he looked to throw, but he got hurt early, and then he got finished right at the end of the round. I thought it finished in the first, if I'm remembering correctly. Could have been the second round. Going off memory, I watched a lot of kickboxing this weekend. But Kubo brought it. Aggressive with the hands. And really, he let flurries go. And that's big. It's one thing to kind of find your stoppage with the single shot. You know, the perfect shot. But sometimes you get a guy hurt and you got to get a guy out of there with consistent offense. And sometimes you don't get them hurt until the end of that consistent offense. So you got to put together aggressive, strong flurries that might have the kill shot on the end of them, as opposed to just thinking, land the perfect shot, then clean it all up with my hands. Sometimes you got to create the kill shot by being confident in your ability to go after somebody, land strong, and then know that you've got them hurt, and then build on it. But it can't just be all you winning kickboxing, and then every once in a while you catch a guy with a shot. Sometimes believe in your ability, believe in your power, and go in there and throw a 5-6, flurry, and expect that something in that flurry is going to get them hurt, and something later in that flurry might have them more hurt. So Kubo went out there, gave that work, and got the victory. Yusuke Takai, Ishida just got in trouble so quick. You know, a shot dropped him. I think he was dropped by a straight shot. And then he got back up, and again, it's one of those two-round rules. But Takai then threw like three hooks in a row, and the third hook put Ishida down. Wasn't the most the most devastating shot, but he just wasn't there. He wasn't good to compete competitively after the first down. He just got up and really just got hit by shots that I didn't think should have put him down. But if you're already hurt, you never know. And Ishida gets the loss. Takai gets the victory. And Takai's now fought two fights. One that he gets a really quick finish in the first round. The other one he gets a finish in the third round. So he's fought the least going into the fight with Kenji Kubo, who's now fought what would be five rounds, or at least a late four, if I'm remembering. I'm not remembering exactly correctly. It could have been at the end of the second that stoppage came. But I really thought that it was at the end of the first. Nevertheless, sometimes, you know, people who look at details like that, they wonder if the guy who fought the least has the most in the gas tank going into the last round. For me, I thought it was a little bit of that, but I also thought it was a little bit more. Takai was better on this night, and Kijikubo wasn't able to find the clean offense that he'd found in the earlier rounds. Takai was able to land that offense and go on to become the 55kg champion. Of course, now you think they make a match, even though he's a little bit bigger, they make a match with Takuru. Takuru, who seems to no longer fight at 55kgs, we'll talk about him in a little bit here as he proves to be one of the better fighters in the world once again. But good stuff for Yusiki Takai, and it was a big night for him. You always want to get that win. You see they got the banners up, and the banner had Wii Ru, and it had Ku up there. And now Takai can see his name go up there as well as one of the best guys in the promotion, and one of the, you know, making an argument for his case as one of the best 55kg fighters in the world. Unfortunately, rankings usually don't have guys that low. They're just not enough of a pool for us to follow and give, you know, accurate insight on what we're seeing, but man, Kijikubo is very, very talented, and he came up short against a better, you know, more in the gas tank fighter in Yusiki Takai. Going to go ahead and go into some of the single fights I mentioned before. We had Koichi defeat Keiji, knocked him out in the third round. That fight, you know, was kind of what I expected. KG didn't have that much of a resume, so that one's not the one that I'm going to harp on as much. I definitely want to invest into the Tetsuya Yamada versus Hiroya fight. Of course, you guys remember me last week. I wanted to go ahead and have some fun, pick Hiroya to get the upset. Hiroya was able to land clean kickboxing in spots here and there, but Tetsuya Yamada, if there's one thing that I will always give him credit for, this guy is accurate. He can really find the right shot at the right time. And it's been consistent. You know, the second Kevin Ross fight, he's able to find the right shot at the right time. Here you see it tonight. Gets Hiroya in trouble. And Hiroya, of course, always game, always gets up and tries to come back. But Tetsuya Yamada gets him out of there late in the second round, if I'm remembering correctly. He's a fun guy to have in the promotion. Fun guy to have in the weight class. Great matchups to make with him. World-class resume in kickboxing and Muay Thai. He's got the opportunity to go against some of the best in the world. Fought Sanchai. He's awesome. So we want to see more of Tetsuya Yamada down the road. And this is the kind of thing that you expect to have. And it's cool to see the online buzz. A lot of people on my Twitter feed were talking about, okay, it's Yamada time and that kind of deal. And I had fun picking Hiroya for the upset because Hiroya, he does a really good job of looking absolutely spectacular against mid-level and low-level opposition. But when he goes against high-level opposition, the best he's able to do is put up really competitive fights. And I know the next stage in his life, and he's still young enough to do it, the next stage in his life as a fighter is to figure out how do you get your hands raised against the elite. That's the thing that's missing from there. Because he has survived, I think very few people remember that once upon a time, K1 force-fed this kid as the next Masato. And it had nothing to do with Hiroya. It was not his fault at all. But once upon a time, they put him in headgear and had him spar Masato for a round at one of the fight events. And every time that he was on a card, they always made sure his fight was on TV. And I understand what they were trying to do. They put together, you know, they were trying to produce the next young star. They put together the Koshin tournament in an attempt to produce the next young star. And Hiroya was part of that. Now, you guys have been listening to me in this podcast for the years. You'll know how I feel about how that all went down. And it did do its job inevitably. Masaki Nori came from there. Nori came from there. Urabe came from there. So they produced stars from that field. But it didn't do us, you know, any justice to Hiroya, who was kind of forced on people. I truly believe that audience has long forgotten that, because that's been a while. We're in 2017 now, and I truly believe all that was probably going on around 2008, 2009. So we're now far enough away for most people to not remember that. They just want to see the guy who goes out there and puts on good kickboxing performances. Hiroya does that. The next step for him is to figure out how to beat elite guys. He'll win against mid-level, he'll go to Thailand and have some success. He does fight, which is good. I'm glad that he goes out there and looks for international opportunities. But that's what's needed there. Yamada, just got to keep being you, man. They got to give you some fun matchups. Of course, Ku, who we're going to talk about in seconds, is an opportunity. I'm just glad that he's here. Next super fight we're going to talk about, you know what? We'll go ahead and go with Ku right now. Ku, as he gets a victory over Hideki Yamazaki, this is the second time that he's beaten him. There's such a thing as not having your night. And for me, Yamazaki, not only did he lose this fight, because really this was kind of a ho-hum forgettable fight. Ku was able to land clean offense and spots as always. There are times where Ku will throw a combination where he'll, you know, land all three punches and then not throw for a while. But pretty much he came out there off the glove touch, fired the power, you know, left leg high, ate up the inside leg, body kick, movement. He'd do a jumping knee here and there. But despite Ku doing what he did, I think this performance, and there was, I say, in the second round, he put together offensive series. It was at the end of the first. He put together an offensive series that had Yamazaki visibly hurt. Could have been the second. Anyways, outside of that, it was pretty much Hideki watching Ku move around. Like, he just never found comfort. He threw a shot here and there. The crowd would always cheer if he ever landed anything. But even after landing it, you would think that he'd get separation and be like, that was good. I landed something. Pop from the crowd. Let's go. Let the hands go. But I really felt like he was unsettled, that the movement bothered him, and he never felt comfortable enough to throw offense cleanly. Now, again, everybody knows that Ku is exceptionally good at finding big-time offense in exchanges. Exceptionally good. In particular for a tie. What I usually mean by that is, let's use another guy who's pretty decent at it. We'll use Yotsenkleid. Yotsenkleid does a good job of pulling back and leaning out of the way and finding his right hook inside of your exchanges. He does a pretty good job of that. Ku can literally, if you guys are throwing at the same time, he'll be able to use his vision and find the big shot, and you won't. And you'll be in trouble, and he'll be fine. And the thing that makes me, because he has that ability, it makes me wonder why he doesn't sit in the pocket and throw a little bit more. But then again, of course, he comes from, you know, Thai fighting his whole life, you know, until he got the international opportunities. So the scoring he's used to is you got to make every shot that you throw count, because missing, of course, works against you, and getting hit works against you. So even if he finds that he can find that big shot here and there, he usually doesn't press the advantage unless he knows he's got you hurt. And he'll look to get you out of there. If you're hurt, he'll look to get you out of there. He's not a guy who's going to do nothing. But he's a guy that I think, as good as he is, he could be better if he hung out in the pocket and exchange a little bit more. He could be even more dominant than he is. Looks like him and Masaki Nori are set to go in June. So more great stuff coming from the best fighter in the world in the super lightweight division. We'll go ahead and move on to Takuru as he gets a victory over Victor Sorovia. I told everybody that I really thought that this fight was going to be the most entertaining of the kickboxing contest this past weekend, and it did not disappoint. It really did show some good skill, and Victor Sorovia did a good job of throwing combinations and kicks. He did a good job of you know, bringing his best to the dance. The biggest thing of note, then as soon as the fight that started, the first thing that really went through my mind as I was watching these two is, man, Takuru looks huge compared to Victor Sorovia. And I didn't think that was going to happen. I thought Sorovia would be, you know, of equal size maybe. But when I saw them after rehydration or whatever, I just felt like Takuru looked huge. And I was like, what's Sorovia going to do to hurt him? And then after a while, I started to realize there's nothing he's going to do to hurt him. He's just too big and strong. You can make good arguments for Sorovia out kickboxing Takuru for good portions of the fight in the first round and the second round. But the difference was whenever Takuru threw anything, it landed significantly, and Sorovia kept playing with his back to the ropes, or he'd always move away. And there was this period of times where Takuru was just straight Terminator, walking him down, looking to score offense. And that works against you on the scorecards, in particular when you're going against, you know, the biggest, you know, Japanese kickboxing star since Masato. This kid walked him down, found his offense. Round three, Sorovia wasn't moving as much, exchanging a little bit more, Takuru finding his big offense here and there. And then after a really mean exchange, a big shot lands and Sorovia goes down in the end, you know, towards the end of the third round. Takuru is your winner, and he's the man. He is the man. It's crazy because when you look at people's Twitter feed all over the world. If you look at people's Facebooks, after this guy competes, there are people from England, people from Holland, people from America, people all commenting on this guy's performance. His fight always gets up and it always gets out there. And now the buzz is he the best fighter in the world? For me, no, he is not the best fighter in the world, because that doesn't just imply talent, it implies resume. But is he doing what he is supposed to do if you're going to be in that argument? Yes, he is not just beating guys, he's stopping them. And this guy was my fight of the year what would have been the 2015 year. 2016, I went a different direction. But 2015, won a tournament, got stoppages all over the place. He's the man. He's the guy to watch. They're doing a great job on Instagram and, you know, following and on Twitter, where they show little videos, little things about the guys in the back. They just do such a great build-up with the Japanese product, with K1. And they've been doing smaller shows, and now there are smaller venues. Now they're moving to a bigger venue for the one in June, and it's really been all action. Takuru is the man. He's the guy to watch in this sport. I expect him. Hopefully, he'll get a super fight on that card in June. If not, I'm hoping that they do something with him down the road. Don't rule out a tournament, even though he doesn't have to fight tournaments if he doesn't want to anymore. But right now, he's a prize fighter and a really, really good one. And he is representing the K1 brand at the absolute highest. We're going to go ahead and move into some other kickboxing action. I'll go ahead and take us to Holland, where the World Fight League went down, and it had a lot of really good fights, good action. I'll go ahead and, you know, there's so much in this fight card that I'm just going to have to start talking about some of the notable winners and some of the notable fights. I can't talk about every fight, but Redeon Duarte gets a victory over Warren Stevelmans. Warren Stevelmans, veteran guy, been in the sport for a while, friend of mine, came up short tonight as Deoati is successful, better kickboxer on this night. I want to see more of him down the road, because Stevelmans was a guy who fought in K1 and had some high-level opportunities, but he was never one of the elite fighters in the world. You would never rank him in the top 10 or top 15. So this is just kind of a guy who, if you get a victory over him, now you want to test yourself against the next level. Deoati is on his way to that level now. Well, I guess maybe, or maybe they have him hang out in this area a little bit longer and see if another opportunity comes for him down the road. Anyways, in their tournament at 70 kgs, he moves on. William Diener is on the other side of the tournament. He meets Michael Ben by unanimous decision, and William Diener is a guy who's been doing it for a long, long time. It'll freak you out to know that once upon a time, William Diener fought, of all people, Dwayne Ludwig in K1. He had two K1 opportunities. Back then, he used to really train with Peter Arts, and the connection worked out, and he came over. And in both opportunities, he came up short, one time losing to Yoshihiro Sato, the other time losing to Dwayne Ludwig, who he dropped in the first round. And then Dwayne was about that business in rounds 2 and 3 and was able to get the fight on the scorecards. So Dieter's been around for a while, tough guy, gets a victory here, and then he goes on to stop Radeon Diaudi in the finals of that four-man tournament. And it just shows that even later in his life, he's still a veteran savvy kickboxer, and you're going to have to be a certain level of guy to get a victory over him, because he still knows what he's doing. He's a very, very solid fighter. Ilzuri Hendrixi, I believe I'm pronouncing that right, Hendrixi, gets a victory over Samantha Van Dorn. That's the surprise of the card for me. Van Dorn's a solid kickboxer, and I would pick her to beat Hendrixi as far as consistent kickboxing scores goes, because she can really get into her combo with a low kick flow. But sometimes she kind of falls in on the exchanges, and Hendrixi's still a good, solid, strong athlete who can find her offense, and she was able to get the victory here. Both women are still looking up at who I would consider the elite in the world, but definitely a big win for Ilzuri Hendrixi as she moves on to bigger and better things, hopefully, and maybe they use her in the promotion again down the road, but good stuff for her. Daryl Stichman gets a victory over Dennis Epama by unanimous decision at 86 kgs. Daryl Stichman really had some buzz back in the It's Showtime days, so I'm glad that he's out here getting victories. It's been so long since he's been, I won't say in the public eye, but I will say it's been long since he's had a victory that made you wonder more about what he could do down the road. It's not too late for him because 86 kgs, there are some things that can be accomplished. There are some fights that could be had, and of course, Glory, they definitely need depth there. So just keep winning and your opportunity will come. I will say that, sorry, I don't know if you guys noticed that. There was a slight glitch going on and I had to stop to address it. But I will get back to the card. I believe I am on a true girl, Bayrock, as he gets a victory over Errol Koning. And again, in that, I got to see much more from Bayrock. I want to see more of him before I can make any sort of assessment at all. This is one of my more one of the times I'm more getting introduced to him than seeing him consistently. So I'd like to see more from him, but A6KGs, I'm glad that they've got those opportunities. Bayrock then goes on to beat Sitchman in the four-man tournament for the A6KGs, and I feel the same even after that outcome. I got to see more of this guy. I'm just not sold on him as of right now. But good to win this one, and as I said with Sitchman, same thing. You just got to keep winning in this weight class. You just got to keep competing in this weight class, and then maybe the opportunity comes. But Bayrock gets the victory in the four-man tournament here. And continuing, one thing I really, really like that Melvin Munhoff's been doing. I like the multiple tournaments, but it's mixed in with a lot of single super fights, and I think that that's really, really huge. Eunice Smalley gets a victory over Jackie Dings, and I've seen Eunice fight a few times. He's all right. He's a pretty talented kid, so I want to see more from him down the road. Jackie Dings isn't bad, but Eunice Smalley is talented. I want to see more from him. Time will tell, but man, he's showing a lot of the tools. Anissa Hadeau is gets a victory over Yona Wymans, and if you're going to be an elite female fighter around that 126 pounds to 135 pound weight area, you got to win these kind of fights. And Anissa gets the victory here. She's now got an opportunity coming up in China on Kunlun. She's right where she needs to be. I ranked her last year after the tournament, and I put, after she won the four woman tournament last year, and actually met her. She came here to Texas. My fighter, Montana Stewart, fought, one of her teammates. And it's just interesting that she's talented. She's getting opportunities. The China opportunity is really, really big. And I think she's got a lot of tools. She's an attractive girl. She's really nice. English comes off clean. We want to see more of her just in general. Whether she gets picked up by Glory or whoever, we need to see more of her against elite level opposition because she has the look and she has the tools, and that matters a lot in the female women's game. But the skill, of course, is the thing that comes up big. And beating Wymans, who of course was known as a period, there's a period of time where Wymans was known for that KO pop. She's got some pretty mean KOs. Wymans has been in some all action fights, of course, with the Denise Kilholtz, and then of course with Enka Van Gestel. Very awesome fights. So if you go against Wymans, you know you're in for a battle. And Anissa Hadeau went in there, got the victory, proving that, the work that she's doing at Mike's gym is really, really paying off. Going to go ahead and move down the line. Ibrahim El-Benoui gets a victory over Fabio Quasi. And man, Ibrahim El-Benoui, I want to see more of this. He is coming off course a win in K1, where he kind of, I think, what was it? It was the Makoto. He's coming off a victory there. He's a talented dude. This is the second win that's kind of, again, Fabio Quasi, still very, very young. I think Quasi's like 20 years old. Still young, but El-Benoui is talented. Excuse me, I think I said Benoui before. El-Benoui is talented. He showed a lot of skill, and every time I've seen him fight, I've been impressed. Want to see more from him, and I definitely want to see periods of clean kickboxing from him, but he can crack, and he was able to get Quasi out of there with a right hand. Brian Doze gets a victory over Redown Caro. That's a big win for Brian Doze. There was a period of time where Redown Caro was, he's doing extremely well in Super Combat, won that tournament, came out of there with kind of some buzz for what could this guy be at 95 KDs, because it's a good spot. It's a really good spot for him, in particular if you look at what Glory's doing. And since then, you know, he's like come upon a couple of losses. Doesn't mean the end of the world. You lose in kickboxing. But Brian Doze is a guy who I always see as a serviceable card filler. But never has he showed me the skill that he could be one of the elites in the world. This win is a big win. And I just think if his chin holds up and he sticks to consistent kickboxing, Brian Doze can be all right. But man, this win goes well. It does good for him. Good stuff. Good stuff here. I would have picked Redon Caro 10 times out of 10 before this happened. So good stuff to Brian Doze. Go ahead and wrap the card up with a couple more. Tariq, I promised myself I wouldn't mess his name on, but I believe it's Kababez. And he gets a victory over Gokhan Gedik. And Kababez is a guy who I've heard buzz about him. I need to personally see more. But he's all right. He's all right. Definitely, I'm going to wait. I'm not going to go big into an analysis of this guy. But he is all right. The big fight on the card was headlined by Fred Sikic getting KO victory over Michael Dute. This was a blowout from start. They came in and Sikic landed a teep that knocked Michael Dute down. Michael Dute got up, and then Fred Sikic came, and he put together a combination low kick, and then he put hand flurry right afterwards, and that hand flurry, something in it. It was like I was saying when I was talking about the K1 card. Something in the flurry got Dute hurt and put Dute down, and he just stayed mean, and he found that offense. Dute got back up. Sikic continued to put combinations together until he landed the shot that got Dute out of there in the first round. Really a blowout performance. This is the biggest performance of Fred Sikic's career. The biggest performance of his career. After this happened, a lot of people wondered what they're going to do with Michael Dute next month because he just got stopped and he'd pretty much get KO'd and then go fight for glory in, you know, 3-4 weeks. They wondered what they're going to do there. Good option would be putting Fred Sikic in there because he brought that heat. And this is the biggest win for him. He's floated around. And again, I mean, it's not like skill set wise, Dute was that much better than him. But Dute's got notoriety and he's got a name, whereas Sikic was looking for this type of win his whole career. And the way that, you know, people talked about it and the fact that it started floating around on Twitter, always good, floating around on Facebook pages, this just the fight. Really, really good stuff there by Fred Sikic, and he moves on. Sorry I cut it short. I forgot that Brian Doze and Ibrahim Benoui, that was in a tournament. Brian Doze beats Ibrahim Benoui. I had it cut off the way it is on my screen, so my apologies there for the confusion. I did not get to see the final of this one, so I'm just kind of breaking down the card. Brian Doze gets a victory over Ibrahim Benoui. And as I mentioned before, didn't get to see this fight, but the importance of Brian Doze having this kind of night is big. What he does with it from here, we'll see. You know, Ibrahim Benoui is fine. And again, I didn't get to see this one. I saw a clip of the KO, but I didn't get to see the one with him and Doze. We'll see what happens with Brian Doze. We'll see what happens with him down the road. Maybe he stays at 95 kgs and maybe opportunities come from him there. Glory's used him a couple times, but I think both times were at heavyweight. So we will see moving forward what we'll do with Brian Doze. But at least on this night, he put it all together and had a really good kickboxing outing, and hopefully it leads to bigger and better things. Murat Egun gets a victory over Errol Zimmerman, and of course for Zimmerman, it just kind of comes down to consistent offense and you know, in shape. And I'm always glad that Errol Zimmerman's competing because I think he's a solid kickboxer, and when he took time away from the sport, I thought that it was good for him, and he lived young, you know, as when he was there, he had fun with it. When Badr Hari came up, Badr Hari used to always crack jokes about people being old and that kind of stuff when he was new and young on the scene. And Errol Zimmerman played off of that a little bit when he fought in the K1 World Grand Prix. I remember the little videos that they did, the VRs, they would always follow him and it'd be him hanging out with some girls. And when he was in Thailand, he was known for being around the girls and he just partied and had fun. And then he came out and fought when he fought. And if he didn't have to train as hard, he wouldn't, and then when he did train hard, he would. When it came to fights, if he let his hands go and he found you early, he got you out of there, and if he didn't, he lost. And then, of course, came the moment where he loses, you know, as he described his coach in the very, very emotional speech that he did in Denver, when he came back and he won that four-man tournament that night for glory, and he said that this win is all about Raymond Dekkers. And so that kind of changed everybody's view on him. guy who was a partier and so on. And then he turned it around, got that win. Of course, he went on to fight, you know, Rico Verheerven. Verheerven beat him, stopped him with low kicks, I want to say, in the second. It was an injury, but he was in bad shape before it. And so Zimmerman's been inconsistent since then. So he gets in there, gets Murat Aygün, who is a solid kickboxer. Not a guy who I would have picked to beat Errol Zimmerman on his A game, but he beat him on this past weekend, and that's what's important. Zimmerman's name, not what it was, but he can still get some victories. And Aygün went out there, put on a good performance, got the victory, and I think we'll see more from him down the road. Zimmerman, you know, I'm glad you're back in sport, back to the gym. Opportunities will come your way. Aygün, I'm hoping that, I believe I'm pronouncing that right, A-Y-G-U-N. So Aygün, I'm hoping to see more from you down the road, because even though it wasn't the cleanest performance in the world, I think that you're a good fighter, and I want to see more from you. The true main event of this card was Peter Arts's, you know, retirement bout, because Peter Arts has retired a lot of times, and this time he will compete against Nordin, or this time gets a victory over Nordin Mehiyadin, and I believe I'm pronouncing that right, Mehiyadin, and Arts gets the victory. We don't even need to talk about the fight or the action that happened in the ring. The most important thing to talk about when you talk about Peter Arts, now that he's done, and there is a great picture. I'm going to put it up on my Instagram. There is a great picture of Semi Schilt, Remy Bonjasky, and Ernesto Hoost, who are all there for this fight, taking a picture with them. One of them, I think Remy might have done it, took it with a selfie while they were all in the ring together. Just an absolutely historic picture as far as the world of kickboxing goes, and as far as what it means in combat sports to have someone, although the four most elite Dutch heavyweight kickboxers, each of certain generations, for them to come together and you know, be in that picture with something else. Like, that was a really, really cool moment. Peter Arts, 3 K1 World Grand Prix, Remy Bonjasky, 3. And then 4 for both Hoost and Schilt. Very, very good stuff in that picture. Arts, of course, I remember when he retired one time, and he said he had just signed a so-and-so fight deal with Glory, and I was like, how is this a retirement bout? It was in at Showtime against Tyrone Spong. It was supposed to be his retirement bout. And he said, hey, I'm going to go out like a man. I want to go against somebody good if it's going to be my last fight. And then literally that week, that lead up is, hey, just my, you know, not really my retirement. I'm actually, you know, I just find a 6-fight deal. And I was like, your retirement fight wasn't actually a retirement fight. And then it just, the dream just kind of kept going, because people were still giving him checks to fight in kickboxing. So after this win, he's into his mid-40s, and you got to ask the question, is he actually done now? There's a really good chance that he probably isn't actually done now. You know, he's, still a prize fighter, and you never know when you get that call. It's easy to walk away now, but when it's all you know is going out there and competing at a high level in combat sports, it's a difficult thing to do. But I do hope he's done, just in terms of, I hope that his life is set up in a way that he can move on into something else and not have to do kickboxing. If he did it, it'd be something that he wanted to do, but I don't want him to be like, I'm a prize fighter, this is what I have to do. I want him to be like, man, it was great being a prize fighter, I'm glad to move on and do this now, but I still love being a prize fighter. If he comes back at all, it's because, not because he's forced to, not because of anything financial. I'm hoping if he ever comes back, it's because, man, I miss that feeling, and I don't know if I'm ever going to get that feeling doing anything else, because you won't. And it's one of the most difficult things that people don't understand when you talk about people in combat sports retiring and moving on to something else. It's multiple things, you know, but in truth, if you're not a world-class kickboxer, or if you're not a boxer, if you're not a MMA fighter, if you're not whatever in combat sports, Muay Thai fighter at the highest level, if this isn't what you do, what are you? What do you do? Sometimes identity is the struggle. Sometimes it's you've been looking for that special feeling your whole career, and you never found it in anything else. Perfect example for me would be, I was watching a documentary about football, and the 1985 Bears, for people, American football, for people in Europe who aren't familiar with that. And there was a player on their team, because they had a really great team and a really great defense. And the guy said, man, I spent my whole after NFL career trying to recreate what I had in my NFL career, trying to recreate that buzz. And this guy had gone and done professional wrestling and all kinds of things. I understand the difficulty, and a lot of people don't. It's really, really tough to walk away from combat sports because you aren't going to get... John Parr is another example of it. He retired, saw that the bills were piling up, said, I better go back and fight a couple times because of financial reasons. Then he realized it's just too much fun doing this. So at 40 years old, he just gets this head kick KO and Glory and, Bellator. And it's like, how long can I live this dream of being this guy? And if you match make someone well there, the opportunities are there. But understand it's so difficult to walk away from the sport, and the reasons aren't always financial. There's just so many different elements that come into play. Other than that, Melvin Manhoff, good job. The next step, of course, for your promotion, you know, is just more events in a year. He usually focuses on one, and this one was on Spike Holland. So he usually focuses on one big card a year. He's got the fan base, and the fighters seem to like, you know, fighting for the promotion, and they do a good job with the production of it. He's got all that figured out. Now he's got to move that one fight. Just do it slow. Go to four cards a year, you know, or three cards a year. But you put on a really good show, and I feel like every year I'm excited about what's going to be the matchup on there. Last year, you know, I think the fun one was Shahid Al-Haj, and I think Moody Kamal. So I think that he puts together really entertaining cards, really big fight fields, and they had a lot of good action throughout. So good stuff for him. Hopefully he can move the number of cards up that he does in a year. We're going to go ahead and keep going through the flow of things. They're going to China now. I told you, there's a big time weekend in kickboxing. Kunlun 16 went down, and there was good stuff all over the place. I will just start breaking it down. Let's go ahead and start with the tournaments. Shotana gets a victory over Li Zhengzhuang and knocks him out. And then the counter to that was Artem Pashporin gets a victory over Nochihiro Nakashima. For those of you who are wondering where that you heard that name before, he is the guy who dresses up as the female anime character in K1. Hasn't competed for K1 in quite some time, but he's competed in China a couple times. And didn't go his way this night. Artem Pashporin is trying to bounce back from the loss to, you know, one of the better fighters of all time in George Petrosian. But he's still a skilled guy and gets the victory here. He then goes on to get a decision victory over Jom Thong in the finals. And that's big for him. Big for him, big for his confidence. He's a bigger, stronger guy. Of course, you know, there's always some, you know, weird stalemates whenever you fight an elite Thai. But Artem Pashporin, big-time victory in this four-man tournament, and the big question is, what do we do with him now? I think that he's having the perfect year. I love that he took the opportunity to go up and challenge himself against the, you know, one of the best of all time. Didn't go his way that night, and then he goes into a tournament, and he still gets a victory over Jom Thong, one of the, you know, the better-known international ties, and that's huge, you know, no matter what you think about decision, that's huge. So Artem Pashporin is doing everything to make sure he's a guy to look out for down the road. He's a talented kid, and I think that there's going to be a lot of wins, and he's going to really do a lot of good things in kickboxing. No shame in losing to Georgia Petrosian. Back to it, my friend. Back to it. 70 kgs is always going to be a hot division in kickboxing, and I'm glad that you're competing around that weight class again. I'm going to go ahead and talk about the other tournament field. It's got some really good stuff in it. We had, Dennis Zuev gets a victory over Artith Hanchana, and he gets a left cross KO. It was in round one, if I remember correctly, but the aggression that Zuev came out with just let me know, okay, he's already kind of set the stage for how he wants to compete. The other bracket had Louis Lee gets a victory over David Ruiz. Stopped him with a mean knee to the body. Ruiz, I thought, was outgunned from jump. Didn't really have the skill set to hang with Liu Lee. Gets the victory with a big-time knee stoppage to the body over David Ruiz, who I felt was playing behind most of the fight. Never really got into his flow. Lee was better. And then, in the final of that, you know, four-man tournament at 70 kgs, Zuev's aggression against Lee, Liu Li was so significant. It's like from jump, he knew, I'm going to stop you. I am going to stop you. Like, it was something made up mentally before the fight happened. And he did it. He came out there and he brought the heat from jump, got him in trouble and got him out of there. Zuev wasn't playing. And it's good to see that. It's good to see different styles. He's got a different style than Poshporin. So I like the idea that you got a lot of different looks, got a lot of different kickboxing styles and stances. But Zuev came with that heat and he was able to get his guy out of there. Zhang Yang gets a victory by low kick stoppage over Artem Ogarov in the second round. And just, I always tell my students this, if you don't start checking kicks consistently, so if somebody lands a low kick on you early, it's not the end of the world. If they land four low kicks on you and you ain't got up one check, you're already waiting, you're already playing from behind a little bit. And Ogarov, some people just try to, in MMA you can get away with it a little bit more, because there's not as many offensive strikes. But in kickboxing, where there's a lot of offensive strikes, you better get your check up there. And really, I always tell, another thing I tell my students all the time, checking kicks isn't a skill, it's a decision. And most people don't make the decision because they don't like the idea of shin on shin. They don't like that feel. It's just something that really tells you, okay, I'm in a fight. You know, when you feel that shin on shin, it's different. It's you know, you could take the punches. You take punches in practice all the time. And you could take kicks and stuff because you take them in practice all the time. People wearing shin guards. If you check a kick without your shin guards on, just joking around, just playing, just doing anything, you something hits your shin, you know it. And in our sport, people mentally make the decision that I am not going to allow you to get, you know, your kick offense off. Here's a shin to stop your shin. And you send that message early and it stops the kick from happening. If you already get yourself down behind, you know, 15 kicks, then you start trying to check, it's just a matter of time before you're out of there. And worse, you're worried about the kick and they can do whatever they want offensively to you. Sometimes people get big-time hand KOs just because you're trying to focus on their check kicks. And then sometimes once that offense starts landing with your hands, you put your earmuffs up and then the low kick gets you in anyways. And it's just like, you gotta stop it early, you know. Once you're already going downstream, it's a little bit too late. It turns into a river quicker than you think. So make sure you stop that early. Wasn't the case in this one. Ogarov was not able to get the check up there. Round two, Zhang Yang got him out of there with the kicks. Good stuff. Antonio Freitas gets a victory over Lin Quang Bang. Ho-hum here. Not much to talk about. Antonio Freitas is all right. Not anyone that I think I'm going to be talking about for a long period of time. But I think he's got good skill. I need to see more, is what I mean. But he hasn't shown me from the eye test as of yet that he's going to be a guy that I'm going to be, you know, raving about for years. But maybe he's got some skill that I haven't seen that can be developed. So I'll give it time there. Gu Hui gets a victory over Sam Poch Fairtex by decision. Gu Hui is a guy who I've seen compete several times for their brand, and I think he's all right. I think he's all right, kickboxer. Again, matchups matter. And at some period of time, we're going to have to see him go against some consistently, you know, high-level opposition. But he does good job when he gets his opportunities in Kunlun and he gets victories. Going to go ahead and talk about female fight. Claire Foreman gets victory over Zhang Meng. Didn't get to see that one. I just wanted to note it. He Boao gets a victory over He Zhuang, one of the rare, you know, they have it sometimes, but they usually try to go China versus the world whenever they match Chinese fighters. Zhang Yifan gets a victory over Tang Guliang, that also was Chinese versus Chinese. So there's a couple of them. I won't get into all of the card. I want to go ahead and leave some of the bigger names for the end. Kong Lingfeng gets a victory over Nangzai. Want to see more from Kong. I'm not sold on him like other people I've seen on Twitter or on some of the fight forums. Not fight forums, but some of the fight circles have mentioned him. I want to see a little bit more. And Vitaly Dabina It's a Victor Vergo. Nope, that was the MMA fight. I don't have to talk about that one. Let me see. I'll go ahead and wrap up the show with the two big fights that I wanted to talk about. Artur Kashenko, who someone on Twitter had the really great joke of Artur Swoleshenko because of how muscular he is. He is swole. He is huge. He is a muscular guy. This is the biggest I've ever seen him in his career as he gets a blowout victory over Yakiria Betar. Betar was just hurt to the body consistently all fight long. He was already playing from behind, which means whenever I say already playing from behind or playing from behind, what I mean is the other person, it's not just that they're getting up with consistent offense, but anytime you are looking to score, the other person keeps hitting you and you're already down, you know, 5, 7, 8 exchanges just to get yourself back into the fight. You are playing second the whole time, not in between, not second as far as exchanges, but second as far as fight flow goes, and those are different things. So going second could mean I can come at you hook, low kick, and then you can come at me 1-2 switch kick. So then you went second there, okay? Playing from behind means I am up 4 exchanges, 3 exchanges. I come in, jab, jab, cross hook, low kick. Then I come back, hook, low kick. Then I come back, cross hook, low kick. You've now given up 3 exchanges, so you've got to figure out how to get 3 exchanges out of the judges' scorecards with your own offense. You either have to do it with a big shot, or you have to do it with consistent offense to get that back. Playing second in a round, as far as how a round is projected, means that you've allowed me to have so many more exchanges than you that because you were only trying to play second and you didn't always get your second opportunities, you are already down in any way where you're playing behind, and that's why I use the term. So if you were wondering what I meant by it, that's what I mean by it. Kashenko, better fighter from jump, close to the distance. He sneaks a sneaky head kick in there here and there, but really his commitment to the body is the best I've seen since he weighed, you know, since he was 154 pounds. Like, he is really committed to it. He's got a different style. I think no one has changed their style more times than Artur Kashenko over my tenure of falling in love with kickboxing. He is a different fighter from the guy who first, you know, got an opportunity in K1, you know, a long time ago, which then turned into being used consistently in their tournaments, then turned into a really good K1 World Grand Prix run, then turned into time with Mike Jim where he played with, you know, power shots a little bit more, then turned into his time in Spain now, you know, where he's a bigger guy playing with power punches. It's just, he's a really, really good fighter and a all-time great fighter. I mean, Kashenko's special, and his big frame is the new addition to his career, something I haven't seen from him before. He really was able to close the distance, walk down Yakiria Betar, and get a stoppage in the second round with a left hook to the body. I do want to mention one that I think I forgot. Ruslan Ateev gets a victory over Yao Yang Atikio in round 2. Didn't get to see it, but I wanted to note it because I've been telling. I think I've mentioned all the other winners on this card. I will wrap the show up with the return of Wang Qihan against Juliana Werner. Werner was trying her best, but Wang Qihan is just too strong. She is the legit power puncher in the women's division, and she is stopping girls consistently. It is so rare to hear stopping women consistently in world kickboxing. Usually that usually goes to someone who's so dominant that people stop going against her. So you've got your Licia Rikers, and you've got your Jermaine Rondami. But even Jermaine Rondami ran into some girls who just did their best to stay up and go the distance. Wang Qihan is at this streak right now where just everybody who gets in there is getting it. And Juliana, just from jump, she never got consistent offense going. Wang Qihan walked her down, played with like some light combination kick flow just for moments, but she's all about throwing that heat. And she got Juliana hurt. Juliana went down. Juliana got up. Juliana went down again. Between rounds, it looked like Juliana did not want to go back out there. She does. She gets stopped TKO in the second round. Wang Qihan is legit, and she is back. She's back to become, you know, one of the best fighters on this planet. I favor her to win this women's tournament that they're putting together, a women's tournament that they put on hold until she came back. That just shows how talented she is and how much they believe in her. They go, she's the show. So they postpone it, and then you get to see that from her later. So I'm definitely curious to see what happens down the road with that tournament, just because I want to see the action of it. But Wen Gihan's legit, one of the best female fighters on the planet. We now move over to Glory, which is going down in a couple days. I wanted to give you guys a quick little breakdown of it. I won't talk about all the fights. I'll talk about most of the fights. Definitely pleased that, you know, K1, our Glory, is staying consistent. We've got this card, we've got a card next month, and we've got a card after that in June, and we've got a card in July, all set up. Glory is doing their thing. They are giving us consistent kickboxing at a high level, and I'm pretty pumped about it. Yahan Zhi is going to get the opportunity to fight Chris Masseri. Chris Masseri is a guy who's fought all over the world, had an opportunity to fight featherweight in the K1 tournament, if I'm remembering correctly. And I believe that was the fight where he was stopped by Ilias Bulaid. And he's going to go against Zhihang Zhi here. It's going to be a tough outing for him because they've done a good job of finding Chinese fighters. Masseri's got consistent offense in spots, but it will be difficult for him to keep Zhi Yahang off of him. I do think of the gentleman that they brought over before, his name eludes me right now, he was a better fighter from China, but I like that they are consistently invested in bringing in Chinese fighters to enter into that market, and that's going to be huge because that's government-run TV. So if they're going to get on TV in China, they have to show a resume of, see, look, we use your athletes, and then that will go a long way. So shout out to them for bringing in Zhi. I think Zhi's Yahang's got a really good chance to beat Masseri, but don't be surprised if Masseri gets his hands raised. Another good thing about this, Masseri is American. Abraham is American. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a second, but that is huge because that means Americans are now being used on the big international cards that everybody's trying to watch, and we don't get enough of that. They only use Americans when they're in the States. Now it seems like they're committed to just giving our athletes opportunities internationally, and we're not just seen as, oh, you're just getting on that card because you're American. It's huge that both of these guys are getting this opportunity, and I'm excited to see it. Next card I'm going to talk about, Antonio Gomez is going against Josh Jauncey. Antonio Gomez is going to lose to Josh Jauncey. Gomez isn't a bad fighter. He just isn't Josh Jauncey. And his resume is actually, you know, and some of the fights, I believe he too was stopped by Ilias Bulaid, if I'm remembering correctly right now. Jauncey's bigger, better, stronger, faster, like better. It's just, he's just a more savvy, complete kickboxer. Gomez will be playing from behind right from the start. 1 minute in, he'll probably be down, you know, 4 or 5 exchanges to 1. Because Gomez is not the kind of guy. He's game. He showed game effort. I believe he had a short notice opportunity in Germany. I'm going to go ahead and click on this and check right now. It's like literally, it's eating me up. Because I was like, man, didn't he fight in Germany short notice? He did. He went against Bakiri short notice in Germany. I still got it. Late in my life, I still got it, folks. But Gomez ain't beating Jauncey. He ain't beating Jauncey. He's just too good. And hopefully Jauncey will move from this opportunity to maybe fighting in France. I hate the big gaps they give Jauncey. I bet you Jauncey would fight in every card if they let him fight on every card. But at least get him on 5 of them. You know, if you're going to do 12 in a year, Jauncey needs to be on 5 of those beasts. So Josh Jauncey should beat Antonio Gomez. Simon Santana goes against Muhammad Amir. And by the way, Simon Santana, he might be the guy I'm thinking of in my mind that lost to Ilias Bulaid. I actually think it is. My apologies if I got that wrong. But Muhammad Amir, of course, is on this card for one reason and one reason only. He has got a hometown base here. He's got a good kickboxing resume, so I'm not saying that he is unfit to be here. But he was really, really taken to school in his last outing. And, I mean, there's no shame there. But they wanted to use him again, give him another opportunity here. I lean towards Elmer to finally get his hands raised on this. I think Simon Santana is of the opposition where Elmer can get a victory. And he's definitely not as difficult as his last fight because it's just, I don't fault Elmer at all for for the losses that he's had in his glory runs. He fought Albert Krauss in 2012 back in the day. And, you know, even though it was later in his career, Krauss is still, you know, tough. If you have the right style, Krauss is still tough for you. Unless you're his style and way stronger, he's still tough. But see here, Adam Chuck was just so skilled and so savvy. He really gave it to Almir. And I think Almir is good enough to beat some guys. It just has to be the right kind of guy. And I think Santana could be that guy. So expect the hometown pop when Muhammad Almir gets a victory over Simon Santana. Next fight on the card I'm going to talk about as we go to the light heavyweight division as Freddie Camayo goes against Imar Haidar. I need to see more of Imar Haidar before I'd ever pick him over Freddie Camayo. I'm not saying that he doesn't have that skill, but Freddie Camayo has got one of the best resumes in kickboxing. Not necessarily all wins, but he really does have all the skill set the strange style where he can box good and he kickbox good, but he'll only kick and only move. And I remember I say this, if you've listened to this podcast, you've heard me say it before. I interviewed Gokhan Saki before Gokhan Saki fought him in the K-1 World Grand Prix. And Gokhan Saki's like, it's hard, it's weird trying to game plan for him because he really doesn't do anything the same. Like, he really doesn't have a style, as he put it. And that's right. He does something different all the time. His mind's thinking differently. You knew with Gokhan Saki, you're getting fast hands and low kicks. Every once in a while, you'll get, a head kick, something spinning. But it was the fast hands, the low kicks, and his ability to counter in between. You knew what you were fighting. You knew Peter Arce was going to drop that big leg low kick on you. As soon as that got hurt, he's going to look for the head kick chop. You're going to see something similar from Reston Hoos. Not so much. He got a head kick chop every once in a while, but most of the time, he was a low kick guy. Roman Majowski is going to play low kick, low kick, low kick, and then look for something explosive. Those guys had styles and identities. You knew what you were going to get before you fought them. Even Badr Hari back in the day used to be jab low kick, hook low kick, single low kick, super fast. He'd go cross switch kick super fast, and then he'd look to build on that until, he'd shoot a right high kick every once in a while. But that was the basis of his game when he was at his best. So you build there, and then that's your identity, and people have got to figure your identity out. Camayo's never been a guy where I was like, hey, I watched 10 Camayo fights and I know exactly who he is. I've watched a lot of his fights and he seems like he's a different guy in every fight. And I think that that'll be too much for Haidar unless Haidar shows me something that I haven't seen from him as of yet. Freddie Camayo gets this victory at light heavyweight. Another bout that we have on the card as Richard Abraham goes against Jamie Bates. This is a fun one for me. I actually think Jamie Bates brings more consistent offense. I hope Abraham's not the guy who he was in his last outing in Chicago where he fought. I really thought that he was just so... I think he was just a little bit too conscious of playing the tie game with a tie. I think he let Pinto, play touch and go, and he never really got into his own offense clean. And I would say before this, the best win that he's got in his resume, the Francis Ambong win is pretty solid. Powellia Jacek, of course, we're seeing that he's not that good. Casey Green, Mike Mathetha, those guys are all American-based guys, except for Powell, who's brought in because they fought in Chicago and he's Polish. But split decision with Ambong, that's what it looked like was going to be his career. And then Antoine Pinto goes into his hometown and he loses a split decision. And I think it was because he was just too tentative. I just think he gave him too much respect and he just decided to play a game that Pinto plays as well, where I really truly believe that if he wanted to, he could just be like, all right, I'm getting you out of there. And he could have just blasted him out of there with just big, strong hands, or at least got him in trouble by being aggressive. And I hope that that's the guy who shows up here, throw mean combinations, really go after him. But if he lets it be a kickboxing bout, I really like Jamie Bates to outscore him. I'm leaning Jamie Bates to get the victory here. Again, he won a regional tournament or a qualifier tournament, if you will, in England. And I'm excited to see what they get from him. We go into what they call the main card, which is going to have a middleweight tournament. And it's got some solid names in this tournament. We've got Barim Rama as he's going to go against and more than likely lose to Alex Pereira. Alex is legit. Of course, he's as talented a guy as you're going to see. He's got the lapses. They haven't used him in a while. But, of course, he's really coming off of, the victory, the KO victory over Adesanya. The fight, it came late. You know, Israel Adesanya, he got the stoppage late in that fight, but he got the stoppage nevertheless, and he was losing it. Fought, you know, was able to get out of there. He was dropped in the second round, came back, got the big win, and he moves into this tournament on beating one of the guys who people consider one of the best in the world. Shout out to him. He's going to meet the winner of Usyk, Bagari, and another guy, Agron Pertini. Solid guy. I got Agron Pertini winning this one. I've seen Pertini fight several times. He's got some real notable wins. I think that this he adds to a solid field. And then I think Bertini meets Alex in the finals. And I got Pereira winning the finals as well. Wouldn't be surprised if Pereira stopped both guys, but I do think that he's the better kickboxer. But Pertini would be my dark horse to win this. He's very, very talented, and it should be an interesting night. Co-headlining this, Nicholas Larson is going against Sit Munchai. Me, personally, if I'm headlining, if I'm going to be on a card, I would rather it not be against a tie, just in case a tie plays the touch-and-go game. You know, the keep away game, entertainment wise, I'd rather fight a Westerner, but if I wasn't at home, I would love to fight the Thai. I'd love to fight the Thai if, like, we're both on the London card and I'm from, you know, France and he's from, you know, Thailand and we both fight in London. That's awesome. But when I fight at home, I'm trying to put on a show for my people. Might be a little bit harder for Larson to put on that show. Larson's still very good, very savvy kickboxer coming off of a victory. I think he'll still win, you know. I mean, I think Simon Chai is all right. I don't think he's great, you know, as far as international ties go. But I think he'll still win. I think Larson will still win. It should be interesting. For me, it's just about what entertainment value will be brought to the victory. So we shall see. Top of the card. They're doing it again, brother, for the third time. We're going to get Willness and Marcus. The first time we got it, Marcus came out with this really brilliant strategy of landing body kicks and clean offense with the hands, didn't really get into a lot of exchanges, and the pacing stayed his. The second time they fought, he gets stopped, TKO, in the second round. Simon Marcus started dropping his hands and, you know, waving his head, just doing the Simon Marcus thing of showing you can't hurt me, I'm fine. They kept exchanging, they kept exchanging. He got hurt in one of the exchanges, got in trouble, and then they got him. Willness was able to get him out of there. Willness gets that victory, then moves on to beat Adesanya by, you know, unanimous decision in January. And this is what people haven't realized. Quietly, very quietly, the last six wins of Jason Willness, Wayne Barrett, Alex Pereira, Philip Verlinden, Joe Schilling, Simon Marcus, Israel Adesanya. Very quietly, he's put together a really good resume. Now, in between there, there's a Joe Schilling loss. There's a Joe Schilling win. There's a Joe Schilling loss because he got that that injury in his leg. And then Joe Schilling had dropped him earlier in that fight before he came back. And then Simon Marcus. There's a Simon Marcus loss, as I mentioned to you before. But that's a pretty good run. You know, before that, he had lost to, like, you know, Sahak, you know, Paparian. And that was in 2014. Another loss to Artem Levin, Glory, you know, 10, which was a million years ago. He's had some really high-level fights, and he's only lost to the best of the best. And he's avenged those losses in the most recent situation. So definitely Willness brings it. Combination kick brings it. It just, to me, just depends on how Marcus fights this. Marcus fights this clean, looks for that body kick and that movement and the boxing. I think he'll be able to score and outland and outpoint Willness very, very easy, I'll say. I think Willness, sometimes he's just so set on getting into his combination low kick game. If you score and move and get out of that, he'll allow you to do it until his big hands can score something to slow you down. But Marcus starts getting in exchanges, starts playing tough, maybe wants to prove that last time was a fluke, and he'll allow Willness to get into his kickboxing game. Should be an interesting bout. It's going to be a fun night. Join us. I will be on Twitter, of course, doing my thing. As I go through this card, I'll be, as I've gone through the last few cards, last, I don't know, 7, 8 cards, breaking the thing, the action down on Twitter. I said 7 or 8 cards. It's probably more like 7 or 8 years of breaking down kickboxing cards as they happen. But Glory will be playing live for me, so I'll be doing it on Twitter. Should be a good one. Thank you, everybody, for listening and watching. Definitely check out this show in Copenhagen if you're local. Hit it up on ESPN3 if you're in the States. Find where they're going to be showing it in your area. Thank you so much. I know it was a longer show today, but man, did we have a lot of kickboxing. And I wanted to get you this preview for sure, and I wanted to get you all the results, the results that happened. So God bless. Thank you for watching, and support kickboxing. Support your kickboxing athletes, and I will be back next week with the results. Peace.